Time now for the original Big Band Serenade with your host, Dennis Humphrey.
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome once again to another Big Band Serenade. This is Dennis Humphrey, your host and your guide as we travel back in time, back to the best of the big band era. This week's episode of One Night Stand is from August of 1971. It features Stan Kenton. In this interview recorded in Peabody, Massachusetts, Stan recalls his roots in the Gus Arnhem Orchestra, his first band in 1941, and the beginnings of his progressive jazz sound shaped by Shelly Manne, Kai Winning, and Vito Musso, among others.
Your theme song, Stan, Artistry and Rhythm. How did this come about?
Well, I think, you know, every band has some kind of music that it identifies itself with, and Artistry and Rhythm wasn't the title of it originally. It was, we just really never had a title. We just called it Theme, and then the band, when we started, everybody had some kind of a tagline, a slogan, and ours was Artistry and Rhythm. So when we recorded the theme, Capitol decided that's what it should be called. So it's been called that ever since.
One Night Stand, featuring the music of and an interview with Stan Kenton. Brought to you by the Hitchcock Retail Showroom in Riverton, Connecticut, with authentic early American reproductions to beautify your home. And by Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks, where you'll find fantastic year-end closeout prices on remaining 1971 Chevys. Good evening, this is Arnold Dane. Welcome to a one-night stand with the fabulous music of Stan Kenton. Thank you.
Dan Kenton in the orchestra, that's Painted Rhythm, featuring Vito Musso's tenor saxophone, Milt Bernhardt on trombone, and Don Bagley's bass. Critic George Simon wrote, "Within the Stan Kenton band nestles one of the greatest combinations of rhythm, harmony, and melody that's ever been assembled by one leader." Yes, that singular sound, which became the Kenton sound, was the result of many combined efforts. Teamwork, it seems, is a proven formula for success, whether it's in musical production or in commercial production. Lambert Hitchcock used the formula to build one of the finest furniture houses the industry has known. Each Hitchcock piece represents the combined efforts of many skilled craftsmen whose talents range from woodworking to weaving, staining, and stenciling. The result? A professionally finished product. For Kenton, it was a sound. For Hitchcock, a design. Both leaders can be credited with the ability to obtain maximum performance from gifted men and can rightly be called masters in their field. Tonight, you're hearing the work of one. Tomorrow, you can see the work of the other at the Hitchcock Retail Showroom in Riverton, Connecticut, where you'll find authentic early American reproductions with some of history's richest designs. Open Monday through Saturday. It was a few months ago, back during the winter, that on very short notice, an engineer and I contacted Stan Kenton, who was resting and relaxing for a few late morning moments in his hotel room, and we asked whether or not we might come up and do a brief interview with him so that we could build this one-night stand around his music. He was making a one-week appearance at a jazz club in Peabody, Massachusetts. He had a long rehearsal scheduled that afternoon, but being the nice guy that he always has been, Kenton said, "Come on up, we'll work it in as long as you don't mind waiting while we rehearse." Mind? Not a bit. We enjoyed hearing the band, which is as fantastic as all the Kenton bands have been. I last interviewed Stan Kenton back in the early 50s. Now, that's nearly 20 years ago. He's aged a bit. I think we all have. He is still impressive, all 6 1/2 feet of him. He's still as nervous and energetic as always. And he's still one of the friendliest and most cooperative men the big band era ever produced. We began our conversation by asking him about this label, Progressive. Stan, were you called Progressive right from the start of your first band?
No, we didn't get into the progressive jazz thing as far as calling it that until about 1947 it was. There was so much confusion with the kind of music we were playing. People say, "What are you playing?" I would say, "It's jazz." And they'd say, "It's funny, it doesn't sound like any jazz I ever heard." So I remember one time in New York, we called everybody together, and I said, "From now on, anybody says, asks what kind of music we're playing, tell them we're playing progressive jazz." And that seemed to, how Americans are. They got to have a tagline and a category for everything.
You've never resented the label?
No. No, not at all.
How did this progressive jazz come to be anyway? I guess you created it and then hired some other arrangers who helped fill in the book.
Well, we were trying to get away from playing dance music, because after all, you can only... You're limited when you're playing dance music because, after all, it must be functional. It must serve as dance music. And we were anxious to get into some experimental things that were more for concerts and more for listening than anything else. So the progressive jazz caption came along when this music we started playing in about 1947.
Mm-hmm. Let's trace your earlier career, Stan. The earliest reference I could find to your work on piano was with Gus Arnheim, 1937 or thereabouts?
I spent about a year and a half with him, yes. So that's the only band that I ever really traveled the road with. I grew up in Hollywood and played mostly in the radio stations and studios and clubs there, and I really never traveled much until my own band got started. But I was with Gus for about a year and a half.
You were with another gentleman named Everett Hoagland, who was a jazz clarinetist. Is that right?
Well, he played saxophone and clarinet, yes. He was from Southern California. He really was about the only big band leader in jazz that we had in that area. And, of course, all of us young musicians, it was the height of our ambition to play one day with him because he was considered it.
You formed your own first band, 1941?
1941.
And according to the notes I got from George Simon, your critics included not only the critics but also the fans and also some of the fellow musicians and the bookers, too. Who I guess constantly harped at you to resign yourself and play what people wanted to hear and become more successful that way.
Well, the first year we were together, it was a pretty stormy year. We got thrown out of a lot of places. And a lot of people, those stories that become kind of legendary now about how I held my ground and, you know, stuck to my guns. And it really wasn't a case of that so much. It was just a case of I didn't know any other way to do it. It was a kind of a case of desperation on my part. I really tried to appease them, but we couldn't seem to make any headway.
One way, Stan, that you did make some headway, though, was with a very commercial recording that featured one of a succession of great female vocalists that you've had. You remember Tampico? Kenton's style of big band jazz is recognized by musically knowledgeable people as a better way of doing things. And Russo's Chevrolet in Windsor Locks is known for better ways of doing things, too. Connecticut residents have come to rely on Russo for a wide selection of Chevy cars and trucks, combined with fair prices and excellent service. Russo has a lot to offer all of the time. But right now is a particularly good time to buy. The 72s are on the way, and Russo has to make room for them. The result? Fantastic year-end closeout prices on remaining 1971 models. What's more, you'll be beating the 1972 price increases. You can count on Russo for the Chevy you've been wanting at a really good price, and for excellent service after the sale. Russo has 13 certified mechanics ready to go to work with the very latest equipment to keep your car in the best possible condition. Take the Bradley exit from I-91, then the first exit to Russo. That's R-U-S-S-O, Russo Chevrolet, directly across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. Stan, Tampico featured June Christie. You also had other great vocalists, Anita O'Day, your wife, Ann Richards, some of the greatest female jazz vocalists of them all.
Yes, there were some good singers. We have an album that's coming out in another few weeks. It's kind of a cute thing. We released, there are six singers all together, and the album's titled Some Women I've Known. And in it are two things by Anita, June Christie, Chris Connors, Jerry Winters, Ann Richards, and of course the last one was Gene Turner.
Oh, boy.
I was trying to recall some of the instruments or instrumentalists who played with your bands, and I was coming up with kind of an all-star lineup of my own. Let me check it through with you if I can. For trumpet, I came up with three pretty fair names, I think. Frank Beach, Buddy Childers, and Conrad Gazzo.
Yes, Gazzo never did play with us. He came from Thornhill's band, and I always wanted him because he really is the father of all the modern first trumpet players, you know, but I never could get him because he was so deeply embedded in Claude Thornhill's band. Oh, there have been a raft of guys, Arnold, that came and went out of the band. I'm very proud of them. I always kind of hesitate to mention some of them for fear some fan is listening in and say, what's the matter with so-and-so? Didn't he like him?
I think that you'd have to recall Shelly Mann as one of your favorite drummers, though.
Yes, very
brilliant
much.
Musician. And on trombone, you featured Kai Winding so very much.
Right.
Yeah. And on sax, I remember Vito Musso was with you for something called Concerto to End All Concertos.
Right.
That was two sides of an old 78, a 10-inch, I think, 78 RPM record. And you'd be amazed at the number of collectors who hear that every time we play it and ask for copies of it. Thank you. Now, how did that one come about originally? Is this something you composed?
The concerto?
Yes.
Well, when we first came east, we were doing some theater dates. The first theater date we ever played was a Flatbush Theater in Brooklyn. And I wanted a piece of music that would kind of show off the band instrumentally, you know, the trumpets, the trombones, and the saxophones, and the rhythm, and also show off the soloists. So I wrote this thing mainly as a display piece, and later it wound up on a V-disc for the armed forces. And somehow they decided they'd call it Concerto and All Concertos. And so when it was later recorded, and with Capitol, the name stuck.
Let's see, the soloists, as I recall, in addition to Musso, were an alto sax player.
Boots Mazzulli.
Yes, and let's see, Eddie Safransky on bass.
Safransky was on there, yes.
And Buddy Childers. I don't know that he necessarily soloed on it. I think he was your lead man at the
first trumpet player, right.
And Sal Salvatore, the old guitarist,
yeah,
who later formed his own band. You have one of the largest orchestras, I think, in existence, haven't you?
Well, I think probably ours is a little bit bigger than some of the other bands around. I think maybe we have about three or four more guys than most of the bands do.
Your current band, what is your instrumentation? I know there were five saxes.
There are five trumpets, there are four trombones and a tuba, and there are five saxophones, a couple of drummers, a bass player, and myself.
Stan Kenton, our guest tonight on A One-Night Stand with the Big Bands, being brought to you by Russo Chevrolet and Windsor Locks, where you'll find fantastic year-end closeout prices on remaining 1971 Chevys, and by the Hitchcock Retail Showroom in Riverton, Connecticut, with authentic early American reproductions to beautify your home. You are tuned to 1080 Radio. This is WTIC, broadcast house in Hartford, Connecticut. In the early 1800s, a young America was growing, and an enterprising young artisan named Lambert Hitchcock was growing with it. His contribution to an expanding America was the advancement of furniture output methods, from the limited productivity of individual craftsmen to primitive mass production. In 1826, Hitchcock chose a small northern Connecticut settlement as the site for a factory famed for chairs stenciled with his name. Today, the quaint, historic factory still stands, nestled on the picturesque banks of the Farmington River. Surviving, too, is Lambert Hitchcock's legacy of quality design and manufacturing. Masterful craftsmen at work in the restored Hitchcock retail showroom adapt the old Hitchcock flavors to authentic modern reproductions. The Hitchcock retail showroom displays 125 styles of furniture, including chairs, tables, benches, mirrors, headboards, and chests. Choose from 13 different finishes and a variety of lovely colors. Visit the showroom and discover the timeless beauty of Hitchcock, designs of yesteryear for today's homemakers. That's the Hitchcock Retail Showroom, Riverton, Connecticut. Open Monday, Tuesday, and Saturday from 9:30 to 5, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 9:30 to 9. Let's continue our conversation now with Stan Kenton. And Stan, your musicians have always been unusually talented, I think. Most of them seem to double, even triple on different instruments.
Yes, they do. The musicians today are incredible. They're unbelievable, really. I think the young musicians today are finer and better than ever before, better dedicated, better educated, and their values are different. It's really a delight to see them come along the way they are.
One thing I did notice, though, traditionally you see saxophonists in a band like yours doubling on clarinet. I didn't see any clarinets on the floor.
No, we don't use clarinets very much. I don't know what the reason is. I think when I was a kid, I heard so much of Benny Goodman and Artie Shaw that I decided I'd heard enough clarinets for the rest of my life.
Let's talk over some of those other great records that I'm sure are also being re-released. There was one called Artistry Jumps.
Right.
And another called Eager Beaver that I think had to be a favorite of most everybody.
Well, they were some of the original records made with Capitol Records when we first started recording for them.
Are these the ones you still get requests for?
Oh, yeah. People still like to hear them.
How many times would you estimate that you played something like Eager Beaver? It must number in the thousands.
Nobody knows.
Thank you.
Get tired, frankly, of playing something like that over and over?
No, not really, I guess. I do. I've always been kind of restless, and it seems like when we create one thing, I somehow always set it aside in favor of something else that we're working on, something new. It's been said, I guess, a few times that if I'd stuck to the early music that the band played in the early 40s, I probably would be one of the richest band leaders ever. But, of course, about the time it got established, I started going after another thing in another direction. It seems like that's been the kind of the story of my career, is just set one thing aside and go in another direction.
Well, you've never compromised in your musical taste, though, and I think that's probably more important to you at this point than the money might be.
Well, I don't know. People say compromise. It seems to me like we've done a lot of compromising, but... a band reflects its leader, and the way we play music is about the only way I know how to play it. So people say sometimes, well, what is the Kenton style? And it's very difficult to analyze it. You could probably get in and talk a little bit about it technically, having to do with voices and harmonic structure and all that. But I think that the best way to describe a style is it's what a guy does best, and it's whatever comes natural to him.
Have you ever considered chucking it all and becoming a psychiatrist? I think that was in the back of your mind at one time.
Oh, I did a number of years ago decide that I would get into psychiatry. I even registered at UCLA to get into pre-med because I wanted to get into psychiatry. I had some emotional upheavals, and I wound up with a psychiatrist for a few months working very hard. And, of course, it seemed like it opened up a magnificent world of treasures for me, so I decided that... If it could do that much for me, well, why shouldn't we help other people? And I became very dedicated to the idea. But I decided I'd take my family to South America for a few months to kind of rest up before I started back to school. And I got on that ship going to South America, and all of a sudden I began to think about music. And I realized I hadn't even scratched the surface, so I never made it.
It's in the blood.
Yes.
You can count on Stan Kenton for great big band sound. And you can count on Russo Chevrolet and Windsor Locks for a great deal on the brand-new 1971 Chevy you've been wanting. The 72s are on the way, and Russo has to make room. The result? Fantastic year-end closeout prices on remaining 1971 models. Stop in while there's still a complete selection of styles and colors to choose from. Russo puts a sales staff with over 70 years of Chevrolet experience at your disposal. They know their product, and they'll be happy to help you choose the Chevy that'll be the best for you and your family. Prices are always fair at Russo, but right now you can save even more than usual. You'll be paying far less than you'd think possible, and you'll be beating the 1972 price increases. What's more, you can count on Russo for both sales and service. So take the Bradley exit from I-91, then the first exit to Russo. That's R-U-S-S-O. Russo Chevrolet, directly across from Bradley International Airport in Windsor Locks. Now, I must ask Stan Kenton the question that everybody seems to ask of me constantly. Whatever happened to the big bands? Now, Stan, I know that some have remained very popular all through the years. Yours, Duke Ellington's, Buddy Rich, Count Basie, and others. But the big band era, as it existed for that golden decade from 1936 to 1946, really is no more.
I think the bands that still exist are bands that have the... based upon the ingredients of jazz music, because jazz music is not a fad. It's a music that is here to stay. And but a lot of the commercial dance bands and so forth have gone by the boards because I think that it was a fad at one time, and I don't think it'll ever quite return like it was before. But I do think there's a growing interest in big bands today. Not so much in reviving the old music, but there's... that new exciting music is being played with bands like Don Ellison, Buddy Rich, and some of these bands. I think that that's the music of the future.
What are the strengths of the current band that you have right now?
Section, well, most of the fellas are younger guys. The average age is about 27, and if I started mentioning all the names, I'm sure the people listening will think I had the phone book open. But there is a lot of talent in the band, and it's just started to record, and I think in another year or so, these musicians that are playing in the band will be quite well known.
How about one-night stands? Is there any such thing anymore, or do you try to make dates as at Lenny's in the Boston area for a week or more?
Most of the dates we play are one-night stands, and sometimes we'll be in a place for 2 days. In this case, we're here for 4 days, and occasionally a week, but mostly it's just one night after another.
A travel party that must number 21 or 22 people. What do you do? Is it mainly by bus?
Altogether by bus. Oh, we fly occasionally if the hops are quite long, but a bus is still the most practical mode of travel.
An example, back to the year 1959, Stan Kenton and his orchestra, about midway through a 5-week road tour at Purdue University's vast music hall.
kind of wearing thin on you, being on the road after all these years?
No, Arnold, I never thought about it, really. I never thought about whether I'd like it or dislike it. I just do it. The road, to me, means freedom musically. That's why I like it, because if we settled down, for instance, in the Coconut Grove in Los Angeles and played, they would never tolerate the way we played music, because the music then has to kind of blend in with the atmosphere and the background and so forth. So when we are on the road playing our concerts and jazz clubs, we're completely free and we're able to play a better grade of music.
We'll hear a sample of that better grade of music very shortly, one done in the early 60s by a Stan Kenton orchestra that not only featured the usual rhythm section and saxophone section, but also five trumpets, four trombones, and four mellophoniums. A beautiful number, and we'll hear it in just a minute. The big band era popularized a sound. How an artist treated the sound defined his personality and gave him a distinctive style. Stan Kenton's treatment of it was a progressive one, the most modern approach of its day. Though his ingenuity may have been considered premature at that time, he had the foresight to realize the inevitable appeal of progressive big band jazz. Lambert Hitchcock was also a man of great foresight, though in a more practical vein. When he built his factory in the little village of Hitchcocksville in 1826, he installed a water wheel of the iron turbine type. It, too, was the most modern style of its day, but its efficiency was soon proven, and it remained in service for well over a century. Production equipment at the restored Hitchcock factory has changed, but the same quality merchandise and skilled craftsmanship still prevail. Stop in soon at the Hitchcock Retail Showroom in Riverton, Connecticut. Open Monday, Tuesday, and Saturday, 9:30 to 5, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 9:30 to 9. Personal life of Stan Kenton. Los Angeles is still your home, is it not?
That's where I grew up, yes.
You have a couple of children who are living in California.
Yeah, I have a daughter, 14, a son, 13. I have another daughter that's 30, and she has three children. I've got everything going here.
Do they also live in California?
No, my older daughter lives in London. She's been over there for the last 6 or 7 years.
Do you get to see the grandchildren frequently?
Oh, not very often, but we cross paths occasionally.
How about your hobbies? I know that you don't have very much time left over for them, but is there something that you are extremely partial to?
I really don't have any hobbies, Arnold.
It's music.
No, it seems like it's all music.
Yeah.
I had a boat, a couple of boats, I think, probably being out on the ocean in a boat's about the most fun I ever had other than music. But I know I don't play golf, and I don't shoot pool, I don't do anything but just music.
Do you still arrange quite a bit yourself?
Not as much as I should, no. I just don't seem to have the time for it, and... I'd like to, because there's certain things that I should write. It seems that only I can write, and I'm behind on that.
How do you come into most of your arrangements then? Are they done by members of your band, or are they done by other people who submit them to you?
No, we have two fellows outside the band that arrange and compose. Then there's one fellow in the band, that Willie Maton, who's quite important as a composer.
And then what do you do? Yours seems to be one of almost a co-op band. You put the arrangement out there, and if anybody has some good ideas, they go ahead and they say, Stan, how about doing such and so?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of that way. They're part of the thing, too, you know. And usually musicians are kind of a strange group. They want to play the kind of music that they like and they enjoy. And I don't think you'll find anybody in the band that's playing in there just because of the money or the job they get, because they love the kind of music that we play, and, of course, their ideas are compatible with mine. And so it's kind of an easy thing, really. So they naturally take a great part in the creativity and the ideas.
Well, the rapport that you obviously have with them is something that must be the envy of many of the other band leaders. Really? It's an excellent relationship.
Yeah, we don't seem to have any problems at all.
You have a good time.
Yeah.
You spend enough time together, so you might as well, right?
We're going to continue with our conversation with Stan Kenton, but before we get to that, I'm going to have the pleasure of introducing my favorite Stan Kenton recording of them all. I think perhaps if you took a survey that most people would agree that this is also their favorite. We'll introduce it in just a minute. Stan Kenton's style of big band jazz is recognized by musically knowledgeable people as a better way of doing things. And Russo Chevrolet and Windsor Locks is known for better ways of doing things, too. Connecticut residents have come to rely on Russo for a wide selection of Chevy cars and trucks, combined with fair prices and excellent service. Russo has a lot to offer all of the time. But right now is a particularly good time to buy. The 72s are on the way, and Russo has to make room for them. The result? Fantastic year-end closeout prices on remaining 1971 models. What's more, you'll be beating the 1972 price increases. You can count on Russo for the Chevy you've been wanting at a really good price and for excellent service after the sale. Russo has 13 certified mechanics ready to go to work with the very latest equipment to keep your car in the best possible condition. Take the Bradley exit from I-91, then the first exit to Russo. That's R-U-S-S-O, Russo Chevrolet, directly across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. Now here is that favorite of mine, Peanut Vendor.
is the favorite record of all those that you've turned out over the years?
Well, Arnold, that seems like a good question and deserves the same kind of an answer, but I really don't have a favorite. There are a lot of records that I wonder what was the matter with me at the time, why we made them. And then there are many things that I'm very proud of, too, that we've recorded. So I really don't have a favorite. It's like somebody says, they say, Stan, what's the greatest band you ever had? You know, I guess they expect me to say, well, I had a band in 1944. One time it was a beater, you know. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Every band has its own personality, even though the sounds are pretty much the same. And I think this band that I'm fronting now is possibly the most exciting thing I've ever had.
Where did you find most of these young musicians?
Most of these fellows are from California, up around San Francisco or Los Angeles. And they used to be from all over the country. We have four or five, two from Indianapolis. What am I talking about? I don't know what it is. We got started with the Hoosiers. We got them in there now.
And what is their educational training like? Let's compare it with yours, for example. How old were you when you started playing piano?
Well, I was 14 years old when I started getting serious about it. And most of the fellows, in fact, all of them are graduates of universities or conservatories.
That's
very
part of the
well
difference
schooled.
Nowadays.
Oh, yes. The young musicians today have to be well-schooled. These fellows, I'm sure, would be as home and equally at home in a symphony as they would be in my band.
How large a book do you carry?
Oh, I don't know. Not so many. There's only maybe 150 arrangements in the book. But if we had everything we'd ever recorded in there, we'd probably have enough to dump truck be hauling around.
You'd need an extra bus.
Yeah.
As a service to Stan Kenton fans, and they are legion and devoted, you would be able to get on a mailing list of the Creative World, a list which tells about his personal appearances, about tour information, also about the records that are available. He has some of the old Capitol labels, and they are now under the Creative World label and being reissued. So you may write to the Creative World, Post Office Box 35216, Los Angeles, California, 90035. What does the future hold for Stan Kenton?
Well, I hope it holds good things, you know. I have a lot of things that I want to do. There are a lot of things I want to see happen musically. And it seems like mainly my function since I've gotten older is to help other people get started and try to help them find direction and so forth.
Stan Kenton, it's nice to say that he is still as nice as he is tall and talented. And as the announcer once said, it's theme time again. For the past 55 minutes on WTIC Radio, you've been listening to A One-Night Stand with the great music and the conversation of Stan Kenton. Our location engineer was Ted Broussard, studio engineer Bob Schirago, our producer Brian Hartnett. Tonight's One-Night Stand has been brought to you by Russo Chevrolet and Windsor Locks, where you'll find fantastic year-end closeout prices on remaining 1971 Chevys. And by the Hitchcock Retail Showroom in Riverton, Connecticut, with authentic early American reproductions to beautify your home. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Arnold Dane on A One-Night Stand, music with Stan Kenton.